The audible of the best in Bitcoin. This is the Cryptoconomy. He certainly made us wait long enough, but we, if you didn't catch it, part four of Brandon Quittam's Bitcoin Mycelium series on symbiosis. Bitcoin is a catalyst for human evolution. It is out, and it is amazing, just like the first three parts. I will have the other episodes in the show notes, so you can check those out if you haven't. They are must listens, must reads, however you want to do it, but they're excellent. But we are going to jump into this article. A quick thank you to Swan Bitcoin. SwanBitcoin.com is the easiest and best place to stack your sats weekly, every paycheck, every month. And it's also, they've got the lowest fees. And Coinbase is down today because it pumped. Who knew? You should have been using Swan Bitcoin. So thank you to those guys for supporting the audible of the Bitcoin space. But without further ado, let's jump right into our read. Bitcoin is a catalyst for human evolution. Symbiosis, Part 4 of 4, by Brandon Quittam. Exploring Bitcoin through the lens of natural selection, evolution, and symbiosis. This is a story of how symbiotic relationships can change the course of history forever. Just as fungi and plants formed a symbiotic relationship to successfully colonize dry land, humans can form symbiosis with Bitcoin to improve individually and to advance our species. In this article, we're going to explore Bitcoin as a catalyst for human evolution through the lens of geological timescales, evolution, and symbiosis. Definition of symbiosis. When two dissimilar organisms live together in intimate association, as in parasitism or mutualism. Example, clownfish and sea anemones. This is part four of The Mycelium of Money. Here's the whole series for reference. Part one, Bitcoin is a decentralized organism, mycelium. Part two, Bitcoin is a social creature. Mushroom. Part 3. Bitcoin is the antivirus to uncertainty. Medicine. And Part 4. Bitcoin is a catalyst for human evolution. Symbiosis. Let's begin. Bootstrapping life on Terra Incognita. 500 million years ago, all biological life lived in the oceans. Dry land, as we know it, was a sterile volcanic wasteland devoid of life. That is, until plants and fungi formed a fateful partnership that changed the course of history forever. This symbiotic partnership created a cascade of evolutionary forces, leading to the creation of all terrestrial life, including Homo sapiens. Fast forward to modernity. Humans now organize around network-based technologies, such as the internet and Bitcoin, which are reincarnations of the ancient mycelial archetype out of which we emerged. Take a deep breath. Life is amazing. So, how did we get here? First, a quick biology lesson. Organisms are classified as either autotrophic or heterotrophic. Autotrophs are organisms that make their food. For example, plants convert sunlight and carbon dioxide into food via photosynthesis. Heterotrophs are organisms that find their food. For example, lions eat the gazelles, and fungi produce enzymes to externally digest their environment. Like human settlers, organisms colonizing new territory are most vulnerable in the early days. In order for fungi to colonize dry land, terra, they needed to secure a reliable food source. Fungi effectively domesticated photosynthesis machines algae, to harness a self-sustaining food source. We can think of these algae as little solar panels bolted onto fungal networks, which made colonizing virgin dry land possible. Soon after getting established, the fungi began digesting the volcanic rock upon which they sat. This ultimately liberated valuable nutrients, which were then traded with other nearby fungi, algae, bacteria, etc. Together, these early settlers bootstrapped life on dry land. Let's see how this compares to Bitcoin. How Satoshi bootstrapped embryonic Bitcoin. In order to colonize the internet, Terra Incognita, with a new form of money, Satoshi needed to form a symbiotic partnership. Fortunately, he found the perfect partnership and made a series of wise decisions that maximized Bitcoin's chance of survival during the bootstrapping phase. How Satoshi, quote, partnered with the algae to bootstrap Bitcoin's life on the internet. High early issuance rate disproportionately rewarded early adopters. The early issuance rate might have been too aggressive. Launched on the Cypherpunks mailing list, if anyone could incubate Bitcoin, it was the Cypherpunks. Timing the launch during the 08-09 financial crisis, was this blind luck? Satoshi's message in the Genesis block, Chancellor on the second brink of bailout. Rallying cry to gain ideologically motivated supporters. Mutualism or parasitism? Examining the cypherpunk Satoshi symbiosis. Were the algae complicit in the fungal partnership? Mutualism? Or were the fungi taking advantage of the algae's ability to make food at the expense of the algae? Parasitism. It appears to be mutualism. The algae may have been initially kidnapped, however, in exchange for photosynthesizing, they gained a mycelial security system and the opportunity to colonize a new niche. Were the cypherpunks complicit, and did they benefit in the partnership? Mutualism. Or did Satoshi take advantage of the cypherpunks because he needed an initial distribution strategy? Parasitism. Quote, it's very attractive to the libertarian viewpoint if we can explain it properly. I'm better with code than with words, though. Satoshi Nakamoto. Most cypherpunks dismissed Bitcoin initially. However, a select few, most notably Hal Finney, jumped on board. Considering they were first to learn about Bitcoin, they had a chance to acquire Bitcoin's native monetary units in exchange for the marginal electricity cost to mine. Essentially, nothing. With the advantage of hindsight, acquiring Bitcoin during the first few years would lead to wealth beyond measure. Quote, the possibility of generating coins today with a few cents of compute time may be a good bet, a payoff of something like 100 million to 1, end quote. Hal Finney. Economic evolution by natural selection. Quote, it is not the strongest of the insert money that survives, nor the most intelligent that survives. It is the one that is most adaptable to change. Charles Darwin. Fungi interact with the world through chemistry. They secrete enzymes to externally digest their environment. Volcanic rock was the only restaurant in town. These early fungi liberated molecular resources by metabolizing the volcanic rock upon which they stood. This enabled a proto-economy made up of primitive fungi, plants, and bacteria. They traded essential molecules required for carbon-based life forms, carbon, nitrogen, oxygen, etc. Fungi were essentially turning rocks into fungible biology tokens. These biology tokens were then traded on top of mycelial rails connecting all nearby life. Fungi both created the market and facilitated trade, leading to an explosion of biodiversity on dry land. Terra takes her first breath. Before plants colonized dry land, our Earth's atmosphere wasn't very hospitable. As you know, plants inhale CO2 and exhale O2. This ultimately led to the formation of our oxygen-rich atmosphere. Planet Earth was taking her first breath. In a sense, fungi unleashed free market dynamics in a new market, which led to an incredible proliferation of life. Now let's explore the parallels with Bitcoin. Bitcoin enables a new economic paradigm. Just as novel organisms emerge via speciation to occupy newly created niches on dry land, Bitcoin evolves its DNA, code, to produce new phenotypes, novel features, to take advantage of new niches. In other words, Bitcoin enables novel financial use cases that were not possible before. This increases the size of the economic pie, thus generating wealth for society. Novelty provided by Bitcoin. The first and only implementation of absolute scarcity. Hard to overstate. A global, near-instant, apolitical settlement system. Neutral money, not easily captured by special interests. Uncensorable medium of exchange for black or gray markets. Democratization of basic financial services. Non-sovereign store of value with negligible barrier to entry. Bitcoin and mycelium improve trade. Mycelial networks act as a resource transport layer and communications network connecting organisms in the biosphere. This enables organisms to voluntarily trade resources and knowledge across species lines. Increasing trade leads to increased specialization, the division of labor, further increasing biodiversity, wealth, and resilience in the ecosystem. Currently, our governments form economic monopolies which prevent many citizens from accessing the global markets. Think about all the unproductive human capital siloed in countries like Iran, Venezuela, and Argentina. Without access to a common economic language, Bitcoin, many people are unable to participate in global trade. As Bitcoin becomes ubiquitous, it unleashes human productivity, leading to increased innovation, specialization, and trade. We're already seeing some basic examples, such as freelancers in Venezuela using Bitcoin as a bridge currency to access US dollars, which effectively evades capital controls. We can extrapolate Bitcoin being used as a bridge currency into a grander vision of the future, where everyone speaks the same economic language. A global market for talent leads to more goods and services produced for a cheaper price. Not to mention, increased trade with developing countries will help lift people out of poverty. Bitcoin enables economic evolution by natural selection. Darwinian evolution by natural selection is a biological engine designed to reward successful actors and eliminate unsuccessful ones. When the antelope gets eaten by the lion, it dies. No one bails out the antelope. Nature has skin in the game. This feedback loop is crucial. Individuals are fragile in order to ensure the system is anti-fragile. Market-based economics is an engine designed to seek more efficient uses of capital by rewarding successful ventures and punishing the unsuccessful. However, our current form of, quote, capitalism is more like cronyism, or as Travis Kling said, socialism for the rich. Instead of letting companies fail, we bail them out. This results in broken incentives, which create a moral hazard, making the entire system more fragile. Not to mention disproportionately hurting the working class. Heads I win, tails you lose. A sound money system, like Bitcoin, improves this economic engine by tightening the feedback mechanism that rewards value creation and punishes failure. In a Bitcoin world, bailouts aren't really possible, because monetary expansion is restrained by a fixed monetary base. Bitcoin ensures individual people or companies are fragile in order to ensure the economic system remains anti-fragile. In other words, Bitcoin increases economic skin in the game, which improves the feedback loop, leading to economic evolution by natural selection. Economic Darwinism for the win. Taming of the Tinrec. Due to a symbiotic relationship with fungi and plants, and evolution by natural selection, our pale blue dot was transformed from a barren rock to the Garden of Eden. Truly marvelous. Let's zoom in to the tail end of the Cretaceous period, about 65 million years ago. The planet was dominated by dinosaurs, both on land and in our oceans. Mammals were hardly relevant. Narrator: But things were about to change. A giant meteor crashed into present-day Mexico, ending the dinosaurs and most life on planet Earth. The impact caused a short-term spike in surface temperatures, followed by an extended cooling due to debris blocking out sunlight. Although most organisms were culled during the cataclysm, some species thrived during the chaos. Most notable for our story are fungi, of course, and a small, shrew-like mammal known as the Tinrec. Surprising. Without sunlight, most plants quickly perished. However, the fungi thrived because they don't rely on sunlight. Remember, they find their own food. Fungi were happily decomposing all the newly deceased organisms. What about the Tinrec? As temperatures declined and food became scarce, most animals who survived the initial shock were killed by fungal pathogens or eventually starved to death as the global food chain seized up. However, not the Tinrec. Tinrecs were humble, shrew-like animals that lived underground, which protected them from the hostile conditions on the surface. Their favorite foods, insects and aquatic plants, were relatively unaffected. Tinrecs are capable of hibernating for up to 9 months at a time. This protects them from short-term volatility and enables them to outlast their competition. The best offense is a good defense. Bitcoin reminds me of the Tinrec. Both live underground and thrive on volatility. Like the Tinrec, Bitcoin simply needs to outlast its competition. Quote, "If you wait by the river long enough, the bodies of your enemies will float by." Sun Tzu. Give thanks to the Tinrec. Turns out the Tinrec is the common ancestor to all living placental mammals. In other words, the only reason both you and I are alive today is because the tiny Tinrec survived the dinosaur-ending apocalypse 65 million years ago. Standing on the shoulders of mycelium. Although mammals got off to a slow start, we've really come into our own over the last million years. One particular great ape, the Homo sapien, achieved global dominance in a relatively short time span. Current evidence suggests humans have only been around for about 500,000 years, making us a relatively young species. For comparison, modern elephants have been around for about 5 million years. Like our fungal forefathers, humans have formed symbiotic relationships with our environment throughout history. In fact, we owe our lives to the networked-based organisms we call fungi. Humans begin to settle down. One especially relevant fungal organism is Saccharomyces cerevisiae, otherwise known as brewer's yeast. Human agriculture appears to have begun around 11,500 years ago, although it might be much older. Interestingly, the first crops we cultivated were also the best grains for brewing beer. This begs the question, did we settle down for food and stability, or to brew more beer? Turns out fermented drinks, beer, wine, etc., provided a safe way to stay hydrated, as water often contained pathogens that killed ancient man. Although we didn't know it at the time, humans formed symbiotic relationships with fungi in order to produce healthy drinking options that saved many lives. Unbeknownst to most moderns, we still heavily rely on our fungal allies today. Without fungi, say goodbye to all beer, wine, chocolate, bread, and many medicines, such as penicillin. Like ancient man partnered with fungi to survive, us moderns have a similar opportunity to partner with Bitcoin. Achieving symbiosis with Bitcoin. We've established how both fungi and Bitcoin symbiotically partner with other organisms to bootstrap life and build anti-fragile ecosystems. Now let's finish up by exploring how humans can partner with Bitcoin to improve individually and to advance our species. Quote, "The real problem of humanity is the following. We have Paleolithic emotions, medieval institutions, and godlike technology." End quote. E.O. Wilson. Money is the most important coordination mechanism for society, and our existing fiat system is driving our species off a cliff. Instead of arguing red versus blue, it's time we address the root cause of our societal malaise. It's time to unfuck the money. Fiat money has appeared periodically throughout history. However, it's the exception, not the rule. Throughout most of history, humans coordinated around a free market for money, gold and silver mainly. Time to wake up from our fiat money coma. Bitcoin is an extended phenotype for humanity. Extended phenotypes are behaviors that extend an organism's natural capabilities. Beaver dams are a good example. Bitcoin is an extended phenotype for humanity. It lowers the trust required for a global society to communicate value, which enables more sophisticated cooperation. This offers a unique opportunity to re-architect society based on the separation of money and state, aka natural money, a huge win for humanity. As such, it's our duty to form symbiosis with such a force. Take another deep breath, as we're fortunate to be alive during such an inflection point. It all starts with individuals forming symbiosis with Bitcoin. Bitcoin was the best performing asset of the last decade. This created unimaginable wealth for early adopters. Besides financial gain, individuals also can benefit from Bitcoin in other ways. Interestingly, the values imbued in Bitcoin seem to rub off on its adherents. As a deflationary asset, Bitcoin teaches us to delay consumption today in order to reap greater benefits tomorrow. Low time preference. In a world filled with uncertainty, Bitcoin provides something to be optimistic about. Rather than change the system from the inside, we can put our energy towards a parallel system. Bitcoin forces us to take personal responsibility for our wealth, both a blessing and a curse. In a world that doesn't value personal responsibility, Bitcoin serves as a wake-up call. Partnering with Bitcoin is good for the individual, but is it good for mankind? Cryptography is fundamentally about defense. Bitcoin is the largest implementation of public key cryptography the world has ever seen. A world with strong cryptography shifts the balance of power towards defense. Defense from tyranny, censorship, overarching governments, and surveillance capitalism. Cryptography allows us to assert our natural rights. Bitcoin protects free speech, ensuring we can vote with our money. Free speech is the foundation of open societies. Forming symbiosis with Bitcoin preserves freedoms for our future generations, a cause worth fighting for. Bitcoin metabolizes fiat infrastructure. We can use fungi to clean up oil spills, halt erosion, create natural pesticides, and even decompose nuclear waste at Chernobyl. In a similar manner, Bitcoin can be used to clean up our dilapidated fiat infrastructure. Fungi fact number one. Fungi have already solved many of our problems, yet we barely understand them. Mycorrhizal mediation is a promising new field that leverages our understanding of mycology to improve our environment, essentially applied mycology. We are experiencing a period of unprecedented monetary expansion. Bitcoin, as a fixed supply monetary good, serves as a counterforce to unfettered money printing. Short term, individuals using Bitcoin to avoid capital controls and hedge against local currency risk. Long term, Bitcoin may force conservatism onto central banks, starting with developing nations. In the richest country in the world, America, average people work for 40 years and never get ahead. The legacy system was designed to siphon wealth from the bottom to the top, most notably during each financial crisis. Since time is money, this forced wealth transfer system should be considered systemic time theft. Make no mistake about it, we should be radicalized by this. Every time you buy Bitcoin, you're selling dollars. It's time to join the peaceful revolution. Occupy UTXOs. Opportunity cost of delaying Bitcoin. Think of all the waste created from a fiat system. Bank bailouts, never-ending wars, and capital misallocation are greatly reduced, if not eliminated, under a hard money system. Each year we delay, we incur increasing opportunity costs. Instead of destroying wealth unnecessarily, how can we invest precious capital into worthy causes? Quote, "We were promised flying cars, and all we got was 140 characters. Peter Thiel. What about colonizing Mars, or reducing the risk of civilization enders such as pandemics or nuclear war? How about Dyson spheres, asteroid mining, or eliminating infectious disease and infant mortality for good? Let's embrace the Bitcoin Renaissance. Bitcoin wears risk on its sleeve. Rather than persist in an opaque financial system designed to enrich the few at the expense of the many, let's embrace a more transparent financial system. A system where risks are laid bare for all to see, rather than buried under bureaucracy and deception. Fiat money is an inorganic system similar to a monocrop industrial farm, centrally planned, susceptible to disease, unsustainable, and fragile. Fiat offers short-term price stability at the expense of long-term systemic risk. In other words, we don't account for the fat-tail risks, such as banks blowing up or global pandemics. Both examples lead to wealth transfer, furthering wealth gaps. Bitcoin, on the other hand, is an organic system similar to an old-growth rainforest. Fierce competition, incremental growth, sustainable, and anti-fragile. Bitcoin accepts short-term price volatility in exchange for long-term systemic stability. Bitcoin enables an anti-fragile monetary system, a huge win for humanity. Bitcoin promotes energy independence. Bitcoin has an insatiable demand for low-cost energy. Miners scour the earth for cheap energy assets, acting as the energy buyer of last resort. This incentivizes innovation in low-cost energy production, such as excess natural gas and stranded hydroelectric. Hash rate has been steadily rising, even when the price is not. Bitcoin miners are inherently long Bitcoin. What do the miners know that you don't? Rather than putting our heads in the sand, it's time to form a partnership with reality. Let's assume Bitcoin continues its monetization path. Eventually, Bitcoin mining becomes a matter of national security. Those countries who produce their own energy and mine Bitcoin will have further geopolitical advantage over countries reliant on importing energy. Fungi fact number two. Fossil fuels, hydrocarbons, carry the energy of ancient sunlight, originally captured by plants through photosynthesis. Interestingly, Earth's entire supply of coal was formed during the Carboniferous period, which ended about 300 million years ago, when fungi learned how to digest lignin. Lignin is the polymer that gives plants their rigid structure and, it's a prerequisite to forming coal. Coal is simply plant material that was half digested by primitive fungi. Modern fungi digest lignin, which prevents new coal from being produced. This creates another incentive for nations to secure local energy sources, whether from fossil fuels, nuclear plants, renewables, or otherwise. Long term, a world with more localized energy production is a more robust world. Like fungi, Bitcoin is an invisible membrane improving the health of the ecosystem it occupies. Humanity will coalesce on neutral energy. The current geopolitical game rewards those who exert influence over money production. This means large, powerful states, politicized money, and special interest groups competing for influence. Quote, "Give me control of a nation's money, and I care not who makes the laws." Mayor Rothschild. Instead, Bitcoin is a neutral money, a system designed to prevent special interests from exerting undue influence over the money. This creates a more fair game. Why would any government give up control of their printing press? In a post-dollar regime, nation-states won't agree on a new reserve currency. Logically, each state prefers to settle debts in their own currency. We're already seeing cracks in the dollar hegemony coming out of places like China, Russia, and Iran. Bitcoin is well-suited for this problem. Bitcoin is fully auditable, hard-capped, and offers final settlement quickly. The perfect neutral money for untrusting nation-states to settle debts. Under this light, Bitcoin is money for enemies. It's time to upgrade humanity by forming symbiosis with Bitcoin. Let's wrap up. The story of life on Earth can be summed up as success comes to those who form symbiotic relationships with networked-based organisms, particularly fungi. As humble apes, it's our duty to form a symbiotic relationship with Bitcoin. We must strive to understand this phenomenon so that we may shepherd her through adolescence. Just like fungi colonizing dry land was the catalyst for biological evolution on Terra, Bitcoin is a catalyst for human evolution. Let's embrace Bitcoin or suffer the fate of the dinosaurs. Thank you, Brandon Quittam. And you can follow him on Medium. I will have the link to this article. Also, so you can drop some applause on part four. Amazing close to this series here. And of course, you can follow him on Twitter, which I will have the link to, or BrandonQuittam.com. But let's halt really quick and talk a little bit about our sponsor for today's show. And that is Swan Bitcoin. Cool story. I logged in this morning. There was the huge rally today. Well, my $50 went through yesterday. So I just got another $50 in sats stacked and I didn't have to do anything. That is what you're going to get at swanbitcoin.com. The easiest, the simplest, no-nonsense Swan Bitcoin savings plan. They seriously have the lowest fees right now. And it is it's how you auto DCA into Bitcoin. You buy every single week, every paycheck, every month, whatever it is you want to do, set it and forget it. And you can auto withdraw to your own keys. You just put in a threshold of after you have this amount of Bitcoin, they automatically just send it to you. And it could be what you just buy every single time. You don't even have to hold it with them for any length. Plus, you're supporting true Bitcoiners. I've been wanting this service for a really, really long time, and I am super happy that Swan Bitcoin came around and are finally providing this in about as easy as it can be done. So highly, highly recommended, guys. You got to go check out swanbitcoin.com, and I'll also have my referral link in the show notes so you can let them know that I was the one who sent you there. Okay, now I want to dig into the commentary, but really fast, there's actually a postscript on this piece titled, "Who is driving the ship?" And it's really short, so let me go ahead and hit that really fast. Fungi enabled complex life on Earth, which eventually gave way to humans. Now humans are creating the internet and Bitcoin, which both embody the same mycelial archetype from which we came. We didn't consciously choose to mimic mycelial networks in these designs. However, animals did taxonomically branch off from fungi millions of years ago. Humans came full circle. The student became the teacher. Was this inevitable? The mycelial archetype appears to be embedded into our species. Over time, network-based structures continually appear, whether due to embedded wisdom or blind luck. Those mycelial-inspired network technologies, once discovered, seem to persist due to their anti-fragile nature. Many people claim we, quote, discovered Bitcoin. I'm sympathetic to this idea. However, it's more accurate to say we rediscovered Bitcoin. The mycelial archetype is an emergent property of biology, which means Bitcoin was inevitable. Now, this is a really interesting point. And anybody who's listened to this show for any amount of time knows that I love the idea, the analogy, and we've really dug into the concept of Bitcoin as a living organism. To be perfectly honest, I think economics is the study of an organism. I see humans are a social organism, and what it means to cooperate and work together is literally to create a structure that is beyond any individual cell. And I think that's what we do in the economic system. And in doing so, just like the cells can't exist without the body, the cells cannot survive outside of the organism. The vast majority of humans would die off without the economy. Like it is because we have these systems, is because we have these structures and these tools, these pricing mechanisms that allow us to coordinate at that scale, that create the organism that is the economy, that is this massive, organic, and ever-shifting network of production and transformation of resources and energy into something that we as a species can use. And I've talked about that multiple times in the past, and this is such a good series to just kind of discover or kind of explore this idea, because there's this weird gap. There's this, it's kind of a gray area when you start talking about communities versus actual organisms. Like, there's one fascinating story that I know I've told previously on the show, but I'll say it again just because I know we've got a lot of new listeners, is that there are these like large wasp. I can't remember exactly where this was, but there's literally these giant freaking wasps that would go in and they would destroy a beehive. In fact, one or a couple of wasps could do a massive amount of damage. I think they were actually feeding on the larva, if I'm not mistaken. But they would literally, you could have 10 or 15 of these huge wasps come in and they would just massacre a hive of thousands and thousands of bees. But what's funny is that there was a defense against this that the bees had. And so the hive, everybody knows, it's like ants are a great analogy here. Beehives are a great analogy. Mycelial networks are a great analogy, obviously. There's so many of these networked organisms, these organisms that work with a handful of extremely simple rules, but in doing so, create one body, create this single unit that is that properly allocates toward a goal. And this idea that the defense mechanism of the bees was that the wasp would, they'd send out scouts. And what would happen is the wasp would go, they would invade the hive, they would look around, they'd be like, oh, this one's plush. You know, we've got a lot of food here. This one's going to be great. I'm going to go back to my buddies. We're going to come back and we're just going to murder everybody here. But what's crazy is that the bees, the defense for the bees was to kill the scout so that the scout could never return and actually give the information back, you know, like lead the other wasps to the hive, because otherwise it'd be a massacre. There's nothing they could do. But with one, they can basically gang up on them and there's nothing the wasp didn't do. But this is the crazy thing. And I'm sure I saw this on like the Discovery Channel or something. It's probably like Planet Earth 2 or something like that. The way they killed the scout just blew my mind, and it has not left me since I watched it. And what they do is that they literally completely surround the wasp. They just like they, if you've ever seen like a ball of bees, I actually had a funny story of honeybees invaded my house when I was younger, I won't get into that. But like they'll actually form like a ball like around the queen or whatever if like, they go into a tree. So it's almost as if they have like a nest, but it's just literally bees grabbing onto other bees. We had one in our yard that was like genuinely like the size of a basketball. It was insane. It was thousands and thousands of bees. But that's essentially what they do on this wasp. Everybody just like, boom, just jumps so that this wasp can't move, basically suffocating it and trapping it where it is. And then what they do is they vibrate. They vibrate because the bee's brain can survive at like a 6 or 7 degree temperature increase or something like that. But the wasp's brain dies with like a 3 to 4 degree increase. So the bees vibrate and they run a fever. And in doing so, they literally cook the wasp. And then the wasp can never leave and go get his buddies and commit the massacre, and the hive is safe. But how crazy is that? That they use the same mechanism that we use as an organism to get, you know, bacteria, to get infections, to get viruses out of our body, that they collectively run a fever to kill an invader into their system. Now, is that one organism, or is that a community? Like, what's the difference? They're bees. Like there's a bunch of them, and we can call them single organisms. But at what point, if more and more of the behavior and the structure of the hive became its own mechanism for survival, the more deeply embedded the community network was, at what point does it become an organism? At what point is the hive the thing and the bees simply its components? There's a wonderful talk. It's from like the 90s or late 80s. I think it's like maybe like 1994 or something like that, by Danny Hillis. It's one of the most fascinating things to me. Back when I first saw it, and I'll still occasionally just like kind of break it out and watch it every once in a while. But it's Hillis, Hillis, and he's got a lot of great talks. Huge early, you know, internet pioneer, and he talks about I think the talk is titled "Back to the Future of." Like 1994 or whatever the year was. But he talks about, even back then, designing software using evolution. That he would literally just mix code. They would run an artificial evolution on like a set of code. And because all the code had skin in the game, you know, like they get deleted. Basically, they would run, you know, like take some small little base and then do a bunch of iterations, like 10,000 different variations of it. And then they would run those 10,000 different variations. And some of them would come close to something simple like counting numbers or something like that. And so a couple of them would, get close to the answer, at least more so than the other, even though like all of them didn't work basically. And you delete all of them except for like the 10% that were the closest to actually producing stuff, like maybe a number or anything. And then you do it again. Then you iterate and you create variations of those, minor variations. And then again, you take the 10% that survived, the 10% that produced it as close to an answer as what you wanted, and then delete the rest. And you do this over and over and over again. You can iterate like this hundreds of thousands of times in no time, because it's a computer. You know, you can just do this over and over again. It's basically brute forcing evolution, brute forcing a system of code. And he says what you get at the end of it is a set of code that's incredibly compact and will do exactly what you want it to do, like whether it's count numbers or do some sort of like basic math or something like that. But he's like, regularly, like, they come up with the result and they can't explain how it works. They don't understand how it does what it does, but they know that it does what it does because its life depended on it. Because they killed off, they scrapped all the code of hundreds of thousands of generations of ancestors that couldn't do the job in order to get to that one. And that was such a fascinating concept. And he kind of talks about the real heart of his speech is about how like the internet and the networked communication that we're doing now is our technology in general is an extension of us, an evolutionary extension of us. It's this general idea that we are becoming something more than individual organisms. We are becoming a networked organism of some sort. And what's funny is that like our economies and these political systems, these institutions that we are constantly creating and then they are falling, are allowing the constant innovation and the shifting of our attempts at finding these sustainable and survivable systems. But what's funny is that like with fiat money is that all of our signals are messed up. It's as if you try to create an organism where all the chemicals are in balance, the glucose system isn't right, the hormones are all screwed up, they respond to the wrong things, the immune system is overreactive, all that sort of stuff. We don't have the right pricing signals for the economy to stay healthy and to stay robust. And he talks about this idea, Brandon Quidham talks about this idea in the article about the individual pieces being fragile so that the independent, like the organism itself, like the overarching system and the whole ecosystem as a whole, can be anti-fragile. And that's something that Taleb talks about in his book. And it's such a fascinating idea that because we can allow so many thousands of companies to fail when something goes wrong, we essentially only incentivize the practices that lead towards survival. So we learn, and because we have these iterations, because we can learn and we can change our behavior so quickly, it doesn't even require the sacrifice of a human life. It requires the sacrifice of our institutions. It requires that a company that's leveraged 40-1 and, you know, happens to have 50,000 employees and yet doesn't have 2 weeks worth of cash to deal with, you know, pausing business, that should fail. And I love that he brings this up, that like that's the disease in our current system, is that the fiat system allows us to prop up that which will end up destroying us. It trades short-term volatility. It covers up all the short-term risk, all the short-term shifts in reality and these prices, these things that should be changing our behavior all the time. Instead, we cover it up for decades. But we create this terrible systemic, this huge long-term systemic imbalance and risk that as soon as there's a gust of wind, as soon as some hurricane comes or a pandemic comes and pauses business or knocks down a building or something, the whole thing is sent into chaos. It just creates balances on so many levels. It destroys the very organs of our organism, of the ecosystem, that that tells us, that tells the cells, that tells us, the humans of this system, the individual components, where to direct our resources, where to find and reallocate capital and value so that we can keep the mechanism alive, so that we can keep the entire system healthy. And it is explicitly because we are so mobile as individuals, because we can let companies fail, we can restructure debt, we can go through defaults. All of the individual components are fragile so that we have an incredibly anti-fragile and adaptive system that can respond to almost any change in the environment, any crazy shock or high volatility or, unavoidable catastrophe or shock to the system can be adjusted very, very quickly. And you create this incredibly anti-fragile system. And that's what Bitcoin does. All of its individual components can fall away. Miners can leave or join the network. Nodes can leave or join the network. But no matter what, the consensus system, the system as a whole, is incredibly anti-fragile. That's yet again another one of the key reasons why starting up a new node can't be this huge, it's not even about keeping up with a node with bandwidth and data costs that you've already got running. It's about the fact that if we somehow, some catastrophe happens and we lose half of the nodes on the network, how long does it take us to heal? How long does it take us to rebuild the body of the Bitcoin system? And the fact that he talks about we came from these systems. You know, these fungal networks literally are the foundation of life on Earth because they are the most resilient and most adaptive systems that you can. And it's such a brilliant simplicity to why it's resilient, because it pushes everything to the edge, because it responds to stimuli on at every location, all across the organism. There's no central point, so there's nothing to attack. So everything can adjust to its environment. And this is the very inherent idea to free markets, is that the skin in the game, the brains and the boots on the field, in the moment, the people who are actually there experiencing the event, who have skin in the game as to the value of it in relation to them, those individual components should be left to make the decisions for themselves, because we're going to, by doing so, everybody, we account for all of the information. Even if everybody is 50% stupid and 50% going to make the wrong decision, if we're only accounting for 50% of the information, imagine the comparison of that. For everybody to accurately make a decision based on half of what they do versus one central institution dictating 90% of what we do, and them having no idea about any of the information, no idea about the individual values of all the people in the ecosystem, that to presume that we could have some committee centrally control and plan the economy is so antithetical to the very nature of what an economy is. By its nature, I'll say it 1,000 times, the use of knowledge in society, or the pretense of knowledge. We will be doing that on the show soon, just because this is an idea that there's never too many times that I can bring it up and refresh this idea. But the use of knowledge in society by Hayek about the pricing system and what it does and how much knowledge it can actually account for, why it is, there's zero comparison. There is no comparison whatsoever. It's hilarious to even suggest otherwise, that something that is able to account for the aggregate value and aggregate decisions of literally billions of people across the world, through their individual skin in the game choices about their lives, about their value, about how things affect them, about the information they know, about the people they know, about the people they trust versus don't trust. All of this information is accounted in every single decision they make, but every single time you take that decision away and put it into the hands of some central institution that's 1,000 miles away, you pretend none of that information exists, and you do it in aggregate. You do it across millions of people at once. Every single one of them knows 1,000 things that that committee doesn't have the slightest clue about, whether it's who is where, what resources they have, who to trust, who not to trust, where this job should be, what the choice of the rest of their life should be, which whether they should change directions or they should learn something new. All of these decisions, thousands of things per person, are tossed out the window as if they don't even relate, as if they're completely irrelevant to the entire working of our economy. And then you put it in the hands of a couple of arrogant, almost always blatantly ignorant, even if they were geniuses, even if they were the smartest people in the world, the only thing that they would realize, being the smartest people in the world, is that they shouldn't be making the decision. And they would necessarily come to the conclusion that there is absolutely no chance in hell that a committee of politicians could possibly account for or understand as much information as all of the economy with skin in the game and with boots on the ground in the actual events that need to be decided on. That's the difference between a free market organizing society and a central government organizing society. And this is another reason why I think Bitcoin is here for the long haul, because it is one of these mycelial systems. It benefits this and the internet. Like, they benefit and grow and evolve in exactly the same way as these systems, except that it uses thinking human beings. The coolest idea in this whole article here is the terra incognita, is the fact that Bitcoin and the internet, like, these things are laying groundwork. They're bootstrapped organisms in the layer of human cognition, of human information, human digestible information. They live in the cognitive sphere. And that's such a fascinating concept around colonizing a new frontier, a new landmass. And in doing so, it is a symbiosis. It is fixing the imbalances of the human economy, of the human ecosystem, and correcting the signals that were making us sick. And in exchange for that, we keep it alive. It provides us with accurate economic signaling. It provides us with economic security and long-term stability. And it provides us with an economic medium that is external to our political and social struggles, that it essentially creates this buffer. It creates this independent medium. The concept that Bitcoin is for enemies. The more people we have disagreeing who all use and become a part of Bitcoin, the stronger Bitcoin is, and the better Bitcoin is as a tool for enabling cooperation between people who both hate or distrust each other. That our natural limitations, that Dunbar's number, where we can only know and understand and, you know, handle the associations of like 100 to 150 people, and after that it becomes too distant. There's too many network connections to know how Bob and, you know, Nancy think of each other. Like it just breaks down past that, and because of that, our quote unquote, you know, networked organisms of humans thousands of years ago could only ever grow, or before, like, the technology, like agriculture and money and language and all of these things that started to bridge those gaps. Before that, we could only ever scale to 100, 200 people. It was with tribes and small groups. But when we create these systems for social scaling to bridge those gaps and to fill in where our emotions and our cognition fail us, we can scale to orders of magnitude. Like, it becomes an exponential thing. One builds on top of the other. And Bitcoin is one of the most, from that perspective, another great piece. Money, Blockchains, and Social Scalability by Nick Szabo. That was one of the most breakthrough ideas, like for me, when I was digging into Nick Szabo's stuff. And one of the ideas that I really was brand new to me, as far as like a term and just laying out the concept, was of social scalability, something that people could understand and relate to regardless of how great the difference was between culture A and culture B. And that's exactly what money does. And that's why political money always falls apart. That's why fiat money is inherently flawed, because inevitably, the more valuable it gets, the more valuable the temptation to corrupt it, the weaker it is to the corruption of its system. And so these ecosystems, these societies, these economies, when they start using something like a fiat money, they get imbalanced until they grow, and they grow until they collapse. There's no other end, because it's a systemic failure of the system, which is why we need a parallel one. We need one that has the right indicators, that has the right, you know, chemical balances telling us where to allocate things, that has a working and accurate price signal system, a sound monetary system that gives us real information about the economy that we can hold independently of each other, and that we can trust in lieu of being able to trust each other, so that even when we don't speak the same language, even when we are under completely different jurisdictions, even when we have completely different cultures, we can still trade, because that totem of trust is there, and we can all run a node. We can all identify and easily validate that our money is independent of the other person, and that there is no trusted third party who can change it, who can manipulate it, who can corrupt it, who can modify anything about it. It is an independent digital asset that exists everywhere in the world and allows cooperation between the greatest of enemies, and becomes stronger the more it does so. That's crazy. There's just nothing quite so fascinating as this system and what it enables and the economy. That's one thing I've always said about like economics and stuff, is that one of the most extraordinary sciences that gets dumbed down to the most idiotic models and boring finance sounding stuff, when really it's an organic system, and it is the study of the human organism as a whole. But I don't even know if I didn't even really write notes for this one. I just started ranting here. I wonder if there's anything else I wanted to say here. I can't think of anything. Just listen to the other three parts if you haven't. One thing I did read is, one thing I do pretty regularly is I just click on like all the links he's got and kind of read the articles that he links to. And one was fascinating, was about the fact that in Chernobyl, there are actually fungi that are feeding on radiation, literally. And that it produces, it's referred to, the process is referred to as radiosynthesis, but it produces a massive amount of melanin, just like kind of in, you know, skin, like human skin. And that they're actually, NASA and, you know, a lot of other people are actually working to, like some university scientists and stuff are working to potentially use this thing to protect against radiation in space. And what its use might be as a tool is that they could actually culture this fungi and extract massive amounts of melanin from it and use it as a, you know, sunscreen. They could, you know, essentially create a layer of it to protect astronauts in space when going through massive amounts of radiation, or the radiation belts, and, you know, all that good stuff. But yeah, that's probably the only thing I wanted to mention. Great article as always. Don't forget, if you're not following Brandon Quittam, don't be failing like that. Go follow Brandon Quittam. I'll have a link to his Twitter, and of course his Medium, so that you can go check out this article in particular and drop some massive applause. And while you're doing that, go ahead and open up a new tab and go to swanbitcoin.com and start your Swan Bitcoin savings account.
takes hardly any time at all. I couldn't believe how quickly I was verified when I had the right ID. My first one expired, and I'm not very responsible, so I didn't keep up with it. With that, though, we will close this one out. Thank you so much for listening. I hope you enjoyed that one. That one, again, was Bitcoin is a catalyst for human evolution. Symbiosis, part 4-4. Don't forget to drop some massive applause on this piece. And thank you guys so much for listening. I am Guy Swan, the guy who has read more about Bitcoin than anybody else you know. And if you would like to support the show, there's a couple of different ways to do that. Patreon.com is always a great one. Become a patron and get access to the Crypto Economy Crew Telegram. We have, oh my good Lord, there are 100 missed messages. I have got to catch up. See, I record one show. I'm busy just for the day, and these guys go crazy. Well, anyway, if you want to join in and hang out with the crew, I will be catching up now on what the hell this conversation is that just exploded. But you can do that by becoming a patron at patreon.com, or you can donate at thecryptoeconomy.com. There's a BTC Pay Server tip jar. Or on like tippin.me or something like that. A bunch of different ways you can donate. Just show me that you did, like, you know, give me the invoice or whatever. I just like to keep the crew for supporters to the podcast. And thank you. Thank you to all the guys and gals out there who have your support means the world. And it supported me and made me keep this going for a very long time before we actually had real sponsors on the show. So thank you so much to everyone who has done that. But if you can't do that, I know this is a lot to ask, but if you can't, you can always subscribe, drop a really good rating on Apple Podcasts, or a bad rating if you don't like the show. I would prefer a good one, though. It would make me feel a lot better. And of course, share this show out with everybody you know in the Bitcoin space. This is the Crypto Economy, soon to be the Crypto Economy Network, and Bitcoin Audible. That is what we do here. We read and explore all of the best works in the Bitcoin space so that everyone who doesn't have the time to read them all can listen instead. I love you all. Thank you for listening. And until next time, take it easy, guys.